We've been looking at this Christmas story here in Luke chapter 2. That's where we're going to be. This is where we're going to be centering our attention for the next, well, for the season of Advent. Last week we read the first 17 verses. This week, just the first seven, because what I want to reflect with you is contained in these seven verses. In those days, writes Luke, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. And she wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Well, we know this story very well. Many of us have heard this ever since we can remember, and we could probably recite it in our sleep. Joseph and Mary arrive in Bethlehem after this long and difficult and tiring, exhausting journey from Nazareth, and it is late afternoon or perhaps early in the evening, although for some of us, we picture it as even later on at night. And they need a place to stay, but there is no place to stay. And they're getting desperate because, after all, Mary is 9 months pregnant and just about to go into labor, if she hasn't already. And the innkeeper can't think of anything because there is no room. And so he finally indicates something about a stable for the animals of the guests in the back of the inn. And during the night, Jesus is born, and then the shepherds come to see this great thing that the angels have announced, followed by the wise men who come from the east bearing gifts. But is this the way it really happened? I ask this question this morning because it's not the way that many, a growing number of biblical scholars today believe happened. They're suggested that over the centuries, the Christmas story has been embellished. In fact, embellished a good bit with things that are not actually found in this text, Luke chapter 2. And if we would look closer at what the text actually says they bid us, if we look at it particularly in light of the cultural and historical context of that day, we just might see things a little bit differently than we have come to imagine. And so this Advent, we started last week, but this Advent we're taking a closer look at the story of Christmas. And we're trying to discover just exactly what took place. And we're trying to see and understand the deeper meanings behind all of what we know took place. So this morning, I want to look at three things in particular with you. I want to look at the arrival of Mary and Joseph in Bethlehem, and I want to look at the inn, and I want to look at the stable. So first of all, and most briefly, the arrival. So the picture of Joseph going door to door sometime that evening, whether it's late afternoon or early evening or late evening, that picture of Joseph desperately begging for shelter because Mary was in labor has always struck a chord with us. as we think about this Christmas story, as we read it to our children, as we reflect on it in our Advent devotions. But when did Joseph and Mary actually arrive in Bethlehem? Most people would say, well, of course, it was on the night that he was born. Well, the text doesn't say that. What does the text say? While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. That's quite different than on the night that they arrived. The distance from Nazareth to Bethlehem is about 70 miles, which would have taken in that day, also today, if you would walk it, a number of days, whether you're walking it or whether you're riding on a donkey. By the way, where did this idea of a donkey come from? You look in the text, where is the donkey mentioned? It is not. As a matter of fact, scholars believe that Joseph and Mary would likely not have been able to afford a donkey, given the economic conditions of that day. And if there was a donkey, then likely that donkey came from a sympathetic relative. At any rate, it is almost unimaginable in that culture and in that day, or in any culture for that matter, that a pregnant woman would be able to ride or walk for a number of days, number of strenuous days, strenuous travel, that distance and that particular route on that particular journey while being 9 months pregnant. I have hiked a portion of that route from Nazareth to Bethlehem, and it is nothing more than what you see here. It's a rocky path on a very narrow areas often with steep ascents and steep declines. It is far more likely, I want to suggest to you, and this is not my suggestion, it is the suggestion of others, that Joseph and Mary made the trip to Bethlehem sometime in advance of her 9 month of pregnancy. And that while they were there, says Luke, perhaps weeks later, the time came for the baby to be born. Well, then what about the inn? Well, verse 7 says, "And she gave birth to her firstborn, a son, and she wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them." It's a little bit different reading. And I'm sure that you noted that when we read it first last week, and then we read it again this, because what are we used to? Because there was no room for them in the inn. But in 2011, the translators of the Bible that we are using chose to use a different word based on an understanding of what the Greek word katalema is. Katalema most often, most accurately refers to a guest room in a home. As a matter of fact, Luke uses this same word when Jesus instructs the disciples to go and prepare for the Passover. "Follow him to the house that he enters," Jesus said to his disciples, "and say to the owner of the house, the teacher asks, what is the katalema, or where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?" Now, Luke knew what the word was for a public inn. And he uses it actually in the parable of the Good Samaritan. We looked at the parable of the Good Samaritan in September. But Luke says, "Then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him, using a very different Greek word. Very different. Katalema, always in the New Testament, refers to a guest room in a private residence. Never is it used for a public inn in the New Testament. Furthermore, those who are immersed in Jewish cultural studies point out that a small, poor village like Bethlehem would likely not have had an inn. Inns were found only in larger areas. So the public inn in the parable of the Good Samaritan was in Jericho, which was a much larger and more prominent town. But little Bethlehem, with its 1,000, maybe, residents, would not have in that day an inn in all likelihood. What does this mean? Is it possible that Luke is saying that there was no room for Mary and Joseph in the guest rooms of the homes in the village? Now, in the first century, slightly more affluent homes had a room added on to the house. I'll show you a diagram of a house in a moment. Most often, that room that was added to the main living quarters was done so by a son who built that room for his wife, his bride-to-be, where they would spend the first year of their marriage in this room, after which, by the way, after a period of 1 year, they would vacate that room and join the rest of the family in laying mats on the floor in the family's main living quarters. And then that room began to be used for other purposes. It could be used for visiting relatives. It could be used for friends. It could be used in the true spirit of Middle Eastern hospitality, because hospitality, two things, honor and hospitality, means everything in the Middle East. It could be used for anyone who was in need. So it would appear then that Luke is saying that there was no room for Mary and Joseph in the guest room. Why was there no room? Well, this is more apparent to us because of the census. People were flocking back to the village of their forefathers to register for the census that was ordered by Caesar. It is very well possible, if not probable, that other members of Joseph's extended family also came back to register for the census in Bethlehem, the place of their forefathers' birth. They were in town for the same reason, and it is possible that they came and arrived in town before Mary and Joseph. And so all of the spaces, all of the floor spots for the mats in the guest room were taken. Well, all right. Then what about the heartless innkeeper, you know, who refused them refuge and who has been the subject of countless Christmas messages? Doesn't that suggest an inn? Didn't he, or was it his sympathetic wife, remember the cave or the stable in the back where the animals were sheltered? And didn't he or they offer it to this desperate couple? Well, once again, check the text. Where is there mention of an innkeeper? It's not there. Well, then what about the stable? That's the third thing that I want you to consider with me. Doesn't the manger imply a stable out in back, or at least the use of a cave as a stable for protecting animals? Not necessarily. In that day, a typical peasant's home in Bethlehem would have looked like this. Very simple. But people living in Bethlehem did not have much money. Sometimes a home would have a guest room, as I have mentioned just a few minutes earlier, and then it would look something like this. But almost always, these homes had another room at the other end where the, it's listed here as stable, quote unquote, where the animals were kept at night to protect them from the cold in the winter and to keep them safe from theft. In between the place where the animals were kept and the guest room, if it had a guest room, is this large single room that served as, well, everything happened in that room. By the way, when Jesus talked about the light in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, "Let your light shine so that all in the room may see." This is the home that he was thinking of. This is the context. You put a light and everyone in that room, everyone in that home sees. Now, the area where the animals were kept was open to the living area. In other words, there was no wall dividing the stable, quote unquote, and the family living room. There was no wall here. However, this stable was about 3 feet lower than the rest of the main family area. And to get down to the stable would require just a few steps. So here is a different angle. If you're going to go from the main living area to the place where the animals were kept, you needed to just take a few steps to get there. And mangers were either freestanding, if I put this back, mangers were either freestanding right there somewhere in the stable, or they were sometimes built into the floor on the edge of the living area so that the animals on the floor would be able to reach into this sunken in the floor feeding trough for feeding or for drinking. By the way, this simple diagram pretty much reflects simple peasant homes from the time of David, that's as far as they've been able to trace it back, up to the middle of the 20th century today. In impoverished areas, this is what a first century home would have looked like. All this is to say that it was quite probable that Jesus was born in Bethlehem in a private home. And when the time came, the men were cleared from the main living room and the midwife, the village midwife, was brought in and she was assisted by the women of the home. And so this idea that somehow Joseph was in some back lot or on the edge of the village or behind this public inn stable, and he delivered Jesus in the middle of the night, in solitude, in isolation, save for Mary and the lowly farm animals, just doesn't jive. It is totally at odds with the culture of the day. Dr. Lyle Bierma from Calvin Seminary, Dr. Kenneth Bailey are two scholars, Kenneth Bailey having lived in the Middle East for 40 years. are just two of a growing number of people who believe that this is the setting that is likely for Jesus' birth. And so in their view, Mary and Joseph travel from Bethlehem for the census decreed by Caesar Augustus, and they arrive not late on Christmas Eve, but some weeks beforehand, because of Mary's pregnancy. And since Bethlehem was the town of Joseph's ancestors, in all probability, Joseph had other relatives who would have immediately invited them to live with them in their homes, since their guest room was full. Even if Joseph and Mary had been total strangers in the town of Bethlehem, Middle Eastern hospitality, such as it was and continues to be, there would have been some family in that village that would have invited them to lay mats somewhere in their main living space, assuming that their guest rooms were full. And it seems to be the case. We take Luke's words at face value. And so when the time came for Jesus' birth, he was placed in one of the mangers. Well, could it have been in this stable area? Could it have been right on the edge? Could, maybe. And when the wise men later visit, when did the wise men come? So we imagine, because, you know, well, Sandra and I talked about this. If you go to our house and the buffet, we've got the wise men there right with the shepherds. And we both look at each other and feel a little awkward about that, because no way were the wise men with the shepherds. When did the wise men arrive? Well, we're not sure. It could have been likely up to 2 years later after Jesus was born. But at some time, considerable time perhaps, the wise men come. And when the wise men come, it is probable that they came to this very house that Jesus was born in. So that's enough. I'm sorry to dispel. But what does this really mean? That's the question. What does all of this really mean? If this understanding is true, does it change anything for us? Well, of course, it changes our ideas of this nice, cozy scene that we have in our minds. It changes the traditional picture that we have of Jesus just a bit, doesn't it? Because our nativity scenes, right, aren't quite right. We have this stable. Neither one of us believe that Jesus was born in that kind of a stable, right? Our Christmas cards, the images we have on Christmas cards, the words of the carols that we sing. And later on this past week, late in the week, I started thumbing through our list of songs and carols. Tonight is going to be a Christmas carol sing. And when you choose your favorites tonight, just look at the lyrics. And, I'm hoping that in light of this morning's message, you'll still be able to sing about some of those things. The dramatization in our children's Christmas programs. We're having a children's Christmas service next Sunday night. All require some adjustments. But it also might change how we view Christmas on a much deeper level. We're talking about the surface level, but on a deeper level. If this understanding is correct, it may show us more clearly what Christmas is really all about. Two things become apparent to us, and these two things are... number one, how ordinary Christmas really was. And secondly, how extraordinary Christmas was. So let's talk about the ordinariness of Jesus' birth. Jesus was born in an ordinary house on an ordinary street in an ordinary village in the Middle East. On the outside, there seems to be, there appears to be nothing particularly unusual about the birth of this baby. Jesus was born then, if this understanding is correct, not in an animal shed on the outskirts of the village, but he was born in a home in the heart of Bethlehem. And if the angels hadn't appeared to the shepherds, then nobody would have thought twice about this. From the very beginning, Jesus came into the world in circumstances that most everyone could identify with in that day, and he joined their lives and our lives today in the ordinary ways and places that we live them. And isn't that what the incarnation is really all about? God taking on our flesh, God taking on our humanity, God identifying with us, God understanding our ordinary human experience. From the moment that he was born, from the moment that he was conceived, Jesus became one with us. But this new understanding also helps us to see better how extraordinary Jesus' birth was. In the traditional understanding of Luke chapter 2, we often focus on the unusual circumstances that were surrounding Jesus' birth, like the desperation of Mary and Joseph, trying to find shelter, labor coming on, like the loneliness and the fear, like the dirt and the filth of the stable. In the Middle East, all of those things might very well be present. But somehow, is that the way it happened? Somehow, in the middle of the loneliness and the desperation and the filth and the mire, they managed to bring a baby into the world. Is that how it happened? I mean, how out of the ordinary that is. How heart-wrenching that somehow this is the way that Jesus came into our world. And so we tend to focus on the extraordinary circumstances rather than the extraordinariness of God taking on our humanity. And what makes Christmas so truly extraordinary is not that the king is not born in a royal palace. It's not the stable. It is not the manger. What is so extraordinary about his birth is that God came and took on human flesh, the eternal infinite by whom and for whom all things came to be, enters into our existence in this fallen world and becomes one with us. That, friends, is what is truly extraordinary. How can the one who transcends time enter our time-bound world? How can the one who is everywhere present now be nowhere present except for a tiny, insignificant village in a forgotten corner of the world? How can one whose power is without limits now also be found as weak and tender and vulnerable? You see, this is what makes Christ's birth truly extraordinary. And even more extraordinary is the reason for his birth. What did the angels say to Joseph? The angels said, "She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sin." God enters our world. He takes on our humanity for us, for our sake. What extraordinary love that is. That Christ would lay aside his divine prerogatives, Philippians chapter 2, and enter into our existence as a human baby. And 33 years later, would go to the cross for the likes of you and me. This is what is truly significant. Not that Christ was born in a filthy animal stall. Not that there was no room in the end. It's not the circumstances. It's the gospel truth that God so loves us, you and me, that he would come into our world and go to the cross. On that first Christmas morning, Jesus came. There, lying in the manger, was none other than the God of the universe himself, love in the flesh, willingly wrapped up in the flesh of our humanity. And that, my friends, is the real wonder and the real marvel of this child of Bethlehem.